So, John, what do you think of as diverse? When I say diverse,
not
what is
this
that?
Court. They're all a bunch of lawyers. They're all from Ivy League schools.
So what are you looking for? What would it take for you to say a diverse court?
Well, one disabled person, maybe.
Nice. Yeah. How about regionalism? Does it matter where they were?
The fact that both nominations from Barack Obama are New Yorkers is interesting to me. I wonder if...
Interesting but not offensive.
Well, no, it wouldn't be offensive. I mean, you know, it's America. I mean, if he nominated someone from Afghanistan, I might have been a little nervous.
Okay, well, one thing that President Obama thinks is important is their gender.
I think she would relish, as I do, the prospect of three women taking their seat on the nation's highest court for the first time in history. A court that would be more inclusive, more representative, more reflective of us as people than ever before.
Okay, that is what President Obama had to say when he announced his nomination of Elena Kagan to the Supreme Court yesterday. He said more inclusive, more reflective of the American people than ever before.
Although
but
more
as you
Catholics,
said,
more Jews, no Protestants.
No Protestants. Yeah, it's a good question.
You can't solve it with nine people either. You
know, no, absolutely. Right. Okay. But we're joined now by Jeff Shechel. He's a historian and author of the new book, Supreme Power, Franklin Roosevelt versus the Supreme Court. And Anupam Chander joins us again, professor of law at the University of California, Davis. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So,
good morning.
Jeff, we actually started this conversation with our listeners yesterday. They've been sounding back to us at thetakeaway.org. And one person called in with a definition.
This is Nick calling from Detroit. A diverse court is good for everybody. No one can argue that diversity is a bad thing, and it brings a wide range of views and opinions to the court and ensures everyone's views and opinions are represented in the interpretation of the law.
So, Jeff, you give me your definition of diversity. What does it mean to you?
Well, I think, as John mentioned a moment ago, it's very difficult for a nine-person court to be fully representative of the United States and all the diversity in this country. But I think that you do strive for balances of different kinds on the court, perspectives of different kinds on the court. So a gender balance, to the extent that you can have it, is an important thing, and there are other perspectives, again, that we hope people bring from their diverse life experiences when they come on the court. But really, you are looking for open-minded justices who are going to interpret the Constitution with intellectual honesty and try to do so in a way that is representative of American rights and interests, broadly speaking. And I think that, ultimately, that interpretation of the Constitution is more important than any particular kind of identity that you bring onto the court.
Okay, but as John brought up, number one, every single one of the Supreme Court justices, if she is confirmed, would be Ivy Leaguers, educated at either Harvard or Yale. She's the second New Yorker. She'll be the third Jew, fourth New Yorker to sit in the high court. Does any regional or religious diversity matter?
Well, I think all of these things matter to the extent that they go into the mix that leads one judge or another to decide as they do. But this is a swirl of factors that you can never fully sort out, and even the judge or justice, him or herself, can't really sort out what it is in any situation that leads them to decide as they do. And I think that we should be careful not to overstate the importance of any one of these factors. Yes, they will all be from Ivy League schools, and that's sort of remarkable in itself. But I don't think that that gives you any indication of whether Sonia Sotomayor and Justice Scalia are going to come down on the same side of a given case. The fact that those two justices I just named are both Catholics doesn't mean that they're going to both wind up on the same side of any decision. In fact, they're more likely to wind up on opposite sides, as we all know. So I think you can look at raw numbers and suggest that it's diverse in this way, not diverse in that way. But again, the important thing is, where did the decisions lead? And that, I think, ultimately is what we need to concern ourselves with the most.
Okay. Anupam Chander, a professor of law at the University of California, Davis, you sent this private letter to the White House counsel office last week in which you talked about Kagan's record at Harvard of hiring faculty members. And you said she hired no Latinos, no African Americans, no American Indians. In fact, they were almost all white males, and then there was one Asian American woman. Why is that important, her record of hiring?
Well, we know that President Obama cares about diversity on the court. He, when he arrived to the highest office as executive office in the country, he looked across and saw that there were 8 men and 1 woman. There was no Latino on the court. And he set out to change that. And he changed that with the appointment, with the nomination of Justice Sotomayor. And now he's trying to change it yet again with the nomination of soon-to-be Justice Elena Kagan. The difficulty is that Elena Kagan, when she arrived to the highest office at the top of the legal pinnacle, the Legal Academy, Dean of Harvard Law School, and she had 6 years in that role, she didn't seem to focus attention on the lack of diversity among the Harvard faculty. It was then a heavily white male faculty, and when she left it, it was still a heavily white male faculty. And so some 80% of her hires were white men. And this is in the period from 2003 to 2009, a period when there has been decades now of women graduating from Yale and Harvard Law Schools and Stanford Law Schools, et cetera, about rates of 1-to-1 with men, and minorities graduating from these law schools at a rate of almost a third.
But how will that affect her decisions on the Supreme Court? What does that say about her qualifications to make reasoned decisions on the court?
It doesn't say anything about her qualifications to make reasoned decisions, but it does tell us whether or not she's willing to go to bat for certain important issues. She's going to be she's going to face lots and lots of contested decisions, and the question is whether she will go to bat for women and minorities. I hope so, but when she had an opportunity to do so, she didn't do so.
Okay, that is Anupam Chander. She's a professor of law at the University of California, Davis. Jeff Sheschel, we've got about 20 seconds. Any response to that?
I would just say two quick things. And one is, I think when you look at the totality of Elena Kagan's experience in all three branches, or in the other two branches of government and through her life, you can see her great commitment to diversity. And I think even simply at Harvard University, where she introduced clinics in the realms of social justice and civil rights, where she started clinics on gender violence.
Jeff Sheschel is a historian and author of the new book, Supreme Power, Franklin Roosevelt versus the Supreme Court.